Rainmaker FM.
This podcast is brought to you by copyblogger.com. Words that work. Build your online authority with powerfully effective content marketing. Get superior content marketing education so you can build a remarkable online presence. Head over to copyblogger.com to learn more. That's copyblogger.com. Hey there, it is so good to see you again. Welcome back to Copyblogger FM, the content marketing podcast. Copyblogger FM is about emerging content marketing trends, interesting disasters, and enduring best practices, along with the occasional rant. My name is Sonia Simone, and I am the Chief Content Officer for Rainmaker Digital, and you can also find me hanging out with the folks who do the heavy lifting over on the Copyblogger blog. So remember, you can always get show notes for every episode, links, extra good stuff, and the complete show archive by pointing your browser to copyblogger.fm. So I am super pleased today to be joined by Ranelle Smith, content strategist extraordinaire. Ranelle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah, thank you.
I'm a huge Copyblogger fan and Rainmaker Digital fan, so this is an honor.
Oh, cool. I'm glad we got together. We've been talking for a while about getting together for a conversation. And for folks who don't know you yet, you want to just let them know kind of who you are, what you do, who you do it for, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. So most people will know me for most of the last three and a half years I've worked for Moz. And I was the editor for their user-generated copy blog, UMoz, and I did some content strategy work from some content for them, and I'll still work for them in the future. But I've always been independent, and now I'm and consulting for them, and now I'm getting back to doing what I am supposed to be doing, and that's helping more of the brands that need content strategy and content help, content work. So yeah. I'm really excited about that.
Cool. Very cool. So, you know, we talk about content a lot on Copyblogger. You talk about content a lot. What do you think, and this is such a vague question, but if you had to kind of pick one thing out of the air, what do you think is the most important thing today about content, and specifically like for normal people, right? So not for somebody who's going to hire some massive agency, some kind of ninja to do their, to work on their content or help their site rank, but just what's the most important thing a normal person should know today about content?
Is that it's not just everywhere, but it's everything. And it's kind of a controversial statement, but the example I use is, you know, we typically think of content. The first thing that comes to mind is text. And then to many people to more and more people, that becomes video. And then when you think about it holistically, that there is content types, and that it can be podcast, audio, video, text, you know, various forms of multimedia, you know, graphic depictions. But in reality, content is the entirety of the experience of your brand. And I think a lot, I've said that before. I said that for the first time on stage at Confab in 2015. And I think there's some people who have said some very similar things. I think it gets lost in translation, so to speak, because it hasn't been very clearly defined. But I'll have you stop and think about this. You know, for example, I'll use a brand like Uber. Mm-hmm. They've had so much negative press in the last couple of years, and it's not just me poo-pooing them. They've had so much negative press in the last couple of years that when people Google them, or when people think about them, or when people are choosing to for a car riding service, if they Google them, or they just think of what their friends say or what they can find in their recent memory, often there's a negative association with that brand. Or whatever the association is with your brand, positive or negative, it impacts the decision people will make in choosing to do business with you. And so I think of it in terms of while we're preaching about content, we have to let brands know that everything that you do has the ability to create content,
right?
Positive or negative. And it's not just something that you create. And that's the thing I really want people to understand. And I think that Uber or a big business example works. I mean, think about very few of us read anything about airlines, but we have very positive or negative associations with airlines, and we may choose somebody because we have to fly them because they're the only ones in our city, or they're the only ones flying to a certain place, but we do so grudgingly.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing with brand. It could be the same way with our brand, where if we can create all these positive associations, and I call it ubiquity, where when we're thinking about positive ubiquity, where we're thinking about sending all these positive vibes into the universe so that positive content, positive associations are being created and not just by us.
Right, right. Yeah, I think a lot of bigger businesses, but also kind of small to medium businesses, forget how important things are, like what's going on with your relationship with your employees, especially now. You know,
absolutely.
Everybody's on Facebook, everybody's on Twitter. Things that used to be behind closed doors are now front and center. And that's just it. I mean, that's the reality.
You hit the nail on the head. You hit the nail on the head. I use that the big business example to get us to understand if people who work for your brand, to make your point, aren't sharing great stories about you in conversation with people who may be prospects or even existing customers, that's going to impact the decisions they make in the future about whether or not to do business with you. So if we think about it in terms of not something that we're creating, it's the things that people are creating about and around us, right? And that could be just a conversation. So for as long as we keep it about something we create, we're always shortchanging ourselves. I mean, think about it.
Right.
We talk about having prospects or customers come to our blogs, but most of us don't have blogs that are that heavily read. Many times, to your point, they're going to find out about a product or service we offer on Facebook or doing a Google search. And then they'll encounter that brand, and then they'll go check from what their friends are saying on Facebook or on Twitter, or they'll do a search on Twitter or a search in Google or Instagram or wherever. Those are things that are being said about you. Those are things that you're creating that are impacting that the decision they make to do business with you. And so that's why I'm on this crusade to change the way people think about content, because I think it has the ability to change dramatically, not only the way business people think about it, but it could dramatically change the way they're able to do business.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It's interesting. I've never heard anybody come up with that definition for content specifically, but that's good. A little controversy. See how people
feel. I've shied away from it for a while, and I'm like, I have a quote, if you can't stop thinking about it, don't stop working on it.
Yeah, there you go.
I've been thinking about this for about 3 years.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, we kind of yammer on and on and on at Copy Blogger about you have to have quality content. And I think that kind of comes out of that era, especially in SEO, when people would hire, a lot of times an offshore freelancer or just local freelancer who wasn't very capable for as little money as you could get and just produce a lot of words, right? Make some words and post them on your website. And so that sucked and it didn't work. And so we started saying, no, it has to be quality content. But that's so vague. That quality content is so vague. And I know that you have some thoughts about, well, what does quality content really mean, especially when we're talking about a business purpose? What makes it quality? How do I know if I'm some, small business trying to get noticed? How do I know that I'm creating quality content?
So one of the things I like to tell people is, you have to consider who would be creating it. And a lot of times, especially for small businesses, they're thinking about, I'm not an expert.
Right.
Well, oftentimes you are the expert. You may be the most expert person in your business. And even if that's not the case relative to your industry, or you should know what you're talking about on this specific topic if you choose to write about it or to share it. So the key thing is authoritative. One of the biggest problems we have in content marketing is people are trying to talk about things because they're hot, but it's not something they know something about. And I think about when we look at experts, and I had a conversation about this yesterday at a conference I did in Houston. If we think about experts, one of the things they do, they do a great job of staying in their own lane. If they're a finance expert, they're not talking about machine learning and rank brain and all these other things in our industry. In our industry, if something's hot, everybody feels like they need to get on top of it. But getting on top of it could be you learning about it and then sharing for your vertical how these things are relevant.
Right.
So the key is authoritative. That doesn't have to come from you. You could be the source. You could be the resource, not necessarily the source, meaning you can interview somebody that helps educate the industry, and that lives on your website or on an owned property for your brand. And so that positions you as a top of mind authority, even though you're not the person, you know, that's quote unquote sharing the information. That's the same thing news reporters do.
Right, right.
You know, they make lots of money by being the best at finding the best sources. The next thing is it should be after authoritative, it should be accessible, meaning the format and the content, the way it's presented, whether it's mobile, responsive, or the type of content, whether it's visual, audible, it should be palatable to them in a meaningful way and somewhat accessible. It should be actionable in some way. One of the things I talk about when I say actionable is people who consume the types of content that content marketers or the people who work for brands share, they're looking to find a way to do something.
Right.
And even though I get frustrated by that, and I often say we need to be better educating people on how they should think about the decisions that they make, people really, really, really want to learn how to do something. And so to me, those are three of the core aspects that people should think about. And all those are low-hanging fruit. Think about it. If you find an expert, whether it's you or somebody on your team or somebody in your industry, you know, you make it accessible. It's in a palatable form for the people who would want to consume it from your industry. And then you make it actionable. You tell somebody specifically how to do something. And that how to do something is so key, because many times people will see you as a definitive resource because you taught them how to do something, and they'll be willing to share that information with other people and come back to your website.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so much. I was just talking about this the other day with Brian Clark. We did a Q&A for one of our courses. And I think so many of us have the curse of knowledge, and we think that the questions are like PhD level. And really, most mm-hmm. people's questions are like mm-hmm. third grade.
Mm-hmm.
Just answer mm-hmm. some third grade questions. That's so mm-hmm. valuable, but mm-hmm. we forget. You know, we forget we think, oh, you know, everybody knows that. And it's like, usually, I mean, most people don't know the difference between like a browser and a search engine. So yeah, people don't really, there's a lot that people don't know.
I hope I don't get myself in trouble. I'll use copy bloggers as an example. I started reading copy blogger when I first got into quote unquote content marketing 3-4 years ago, or maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. And I remember finding a content and I was like, man, this is not the quote unquote most in-depth information. But here's what I say to that. It is the most useful information.
Right.
And I say that, you know, a lot of blogs and when I was with you, Maz, this was one of the things that frustrated people. They were like, the content that I'm writing, I know suffices, but I would say it lacks the depth for the topic. And they would get so frustrated and say, you know, I could do the same piece of content for another blog and it would be great. And I would say, hey, stop thinking about how deep you need to go if you lack the depth. Obviously, I don't necessarily want a breadth. I'd rather you be able to go deeper. But what are people looking for on that topic? Mm-hmm. How can you knock it out of the park? And for most business people, they want to know how to do something that may be very basic, but it's something they don't have time to learn about, or they want to be made to feel comfortable that the way that I'm doing this, the way that I know how to do this will suffice and help my business being successful. So one of the things I've enjoyed most about Copyblogger over the years, that it doesn't try to be something that it's not. It's not that it's not the most in-depth content. It's just that you guys aren't trying to be what everybody else is trying to be. And I can think of several very successful blogs that have become less so for that reason. They've kind of jumped all over the board trying to be everything to everybody. And in Copyblogger, I think Copyblogger has just been a great example of a blog that does a tremendous job of educating people on how to better do business, how to better do the things that everybody needs to do. And writing, being able to share, create, design and share content is important for any size company.
Well, and I think the reason that blogs and content heavy businesses get out of that habit is it's really hard. It's hard to keep doing it year in, year out. You know, you want to be like, let's kind of go chase some, you know, let's chase some more,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's chase something we haven't chased before. And that's all cool. And that's exciting and interesting, but I think to your point, it's not necessarily what the audience needs.
No, it's not. But you're making a value judgment there now, right? And that's what gets people in the trouble. And I said this yesterday. You have to be willing to tell people, don't do that.
Right.
And that's what you guys are doing. I'm putting words in your mouth, but I had a conversation just yesterday where I said, I read Daniel Pink's book 2 years ago, and he talked about say yes and, not yes but, and because but's the stop word. And I said, I'm not good at that because sometimes people need to be told, don't do that. there's a better way. Yeah. And I think what happens, and you just hit the nail on the head, when you're willing to tell people, hey, you know what? There's a million different ways to do this. You're right. But there's probably only three that'll work for you. Mm. Why don't you start here? And I think, and I get myself into trouble when I say this, I think that is a huge, huge issue in content marketing or people who are educating brands about content marketing. That yes, there is a million different ways to do it. But as a consultant or as an editor, I think of myself as an editor in much the way that the Jack Dorsey of Twitter says that a CEO, every CEO is an editor because he has to tell people, he or she has to tell people as much what not to do as what to do. And so if we're going to think that way, we should be willing to say, hey, you know what? I'm not saying this is the best way, but I'm at least saying, you know what? Instead of floundering all over the place, try this.
Yeah. Well, and it's you're doing people a huge favor.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, and so sometimes it's a little uncomfortable and you always get, you know, you'll always get somebody who comes by and who's like, you know what you're talking about, you know, because I just, whatever, who knows why. But, and I think web publishing is great for that because you learn to be very, you learn to come from a very ethical place because you constantly ask yourself, every time I write something, I ask myself, do I really mean that? Do I really have confidence that that's good advice? How do I know? What are my biases? What am I bringing to this? And I think if you're paying attention, and of course, if you don't do that, someone will show up and do it for you. I love that about the web. I mean, it's really challenging, but it's really great.
But I think, you know, so one of the things I've always been fascinated with since I was a little kid, well, since I was in right before college, and I actually reread articles that I read in the late 1990s when I was in college, and I actually still have some. And I've always been fascinated about what makes the great great at an individual level, like why do certain people in certain professions, you know, rise to the top. And you know, I read all this book, I read all this research, and it really comes down to something we're talking about. We're kind of talking all around it. Specificity. Where you have to have the courage of your convictions to say, on this topic, nobody's going to beat me. That there'll be sexier things that come along, but in this area, nobody will ever beat me.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. I read a great book when I was in college, and it was a law professor, Stephen Carter. He's a law professor at Yale, and he said his philosophy in college was that I'll outwrite anybody who can outthink me, and I'll think anybody who can outwrite me. And it was just, that was going to be his thing, right? Because, you know, with attorneys, it's all about writing briefs or being able to being a great litigator. And he was like, I'm going to do one or the other better than everybody. I think in life, and you look in research, you look in all these people we adore, whether it's at Apple's or Google's or whatever, the people who have the courage of their convictions, the courage of their convictions and are willing to say on this topic, on this specific area, I'm going to be the best. And not to beat copy bloggers drum, but when I look at it, and I've read hundreds of articles over the years, is I feel like you guys are willing to say, you know what, this is our area, and we're going to be the best at educating business people on this topic. We're not going to be all over the place, and there's a lot of areas on the periphery of it, the whole search and social and content thing that we're going to educate people about, but we're going to make it accessible. We're going to make it palatable. We're going to make it actionable, and we're going to make it relevant to people in a way that you'd find it presentable and not only want to share it, but want to use it.
Right.
And I think that – I agree with something simple. So one of the things I love about the site or sites like you guys, and I think it's something that other brands, even small businesses can emulate, is your pages aren't weighted down with a bunch of images and other elements that everybody else says do this. If you're a consultant like me where you may have time to create this amazing piece of content where you have a day or two to do it, that's great. But if you're, you know, fixing widgets all day or you have a staff of 20 or 30 people, you just need to – all you have time to do is get something down, shoot a short video, you know, share a 500-word blog. But if we're saying, hey, if it has to be 10X, it has to be 10X or bust, then everybody's going to feel like this is a hill they can't climb.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to make it accessible. We have to make it palatable. We have to let people know that, hey, on this topic, you are an authority.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, focus on the substance. Focus on what.
Absolutely.
Focus on what you can help people with. I mean, I'm obsessed with that. Because honestly, I've been doing it long enough. If I didn't have a kind of a reason, I would just get so bored. I would die. But the thing that sort of doesn't ever get boring is helping people for me.
That's so true.
And when somebody says, you know what, I took this thing and I went and did it and it seemed kind of simple, but it really worked. And thank you. That's just, there's nothing like that.
I'm writing that down. I love that quote.
Oh,
I think that is so powerful. The thing that never gets boring is helping people. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a hill you can die on. I hate to use that word, but a friend of mine shared that yesterday. I think those are the types of things. I'm a quote collector, and I'm the type of person I like to I'll come across a quote that for whatever reason speaks to something I'm going through or thinking about, or that I think other people or a large segment of people can use. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those. That's true. That's true. Those are some great marching orders.
That was a good conversation. Sparks these things. Let's talk a little bit. We've kind of been going around on some different things. What do you wish more people would do with their content? What do you see? And you kind of shake your head and say, man, I really wish you would, to our point earlier, I wish you would quit doing that. And I wish you would do this instead.
I wish you would stop thinking about creation. I wish they would spend more time on ideation and think about what people needed.
Okay.
You know, one of the problems, it's just like when people need to get in better shape. And I always use this example. So people cringe who know me because I always use this example. When people need to get in better shape, the first thing they do is they go buy some running shoes and they want to run. That's right. Often one of the worst things to do. Exercise initially can be one of the worst things to do when you're trying to lose weight, because there's all these hormones going on and you don't know how your body, and physicians don't even know how your body specifically will be impacted by including exercise. The key element is to start eating better a little over time, just some habitual changes. Mm. And that'll get you to start losing a little weight, start feeling a little better, start moving a little better. And then you want to look even better and move and feel even better. It's the same thing with content. If you make a small step, and you get to see those changes, it may not even be a change as far as people coming to your website or better engaging with your brand. It's you training yourself about how to produce better content. Mm-hmm. It's you being able to get people on your staff on board with this content creation or content ideation, because they're like, you know what? This person's already started it. Let's just keep the ball rolling.
Right.
So I wish they would stop thinking about the doing and start and do more thinking about what is it that'll help their brand? And that may be, and I say this all the time, that may be less content. I mean, there's some very successful brands out there who only produce one piece of content a month. Now, granted, I'd want to see, especially a small company, have a system around that.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I share with people is collect the questions you get from customer service, from your sales staff, or that you get just from people on social media or people walking around that have questions about products or services you offer or in your vertical. Write blogs around that answer those questions better and more authoritatively than everybody else. That could be 500 word piece of content that you share on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or whatever that gets people to notice your brand and can over time get people around your behind your brand. So to me, it just kind of goes hand in hand. More less creation, more ideation before creating.
Mm. What do you say? You must have clients, especially, you know, in a big organization, they can always, there's always a body, right? But in a small organization or a freelancer or, a really tight little organization, what do you say to people who say, I have no idea how to get the resources to get this done? It's too hard. I can't do it myself. I'm already exhausted. I know you have some thoughts on kind of being able to get it done.
Right. And so, I'll use my daughters as an example of this. I have two young daughters. And whenever there's something they don't want to do or that they can't do, I know my approach is to focus on the can't. Like, what do you mean you can't? And I always say there's no such word as can't. But then I do an end around and I say, okay, what's stopping you?
Right.
Right. And then I start pulling those things away. And as soon as I pull those things away, they're left bare, right? It's like, I don't have any more excuses. And so with the business person, I'll say, okay, you know, what are your goals? What are your objectives? Mm-hmm. And it could be that they have enough customers. They may be worried about down the road, the competition. And so I may say to them, okay, does that mean you need to change the approach to your business? Do you need to introduce a new concept? And if you want to be an authority in that area, maybe you want to start sharing content around that. But the key is taking a first step. So you assign a priority, and that could be, I need to have more content out there because my competition is sharing content, and that competition is right in my area. Mm-hmm. Then I'd want them to define a specific goal and say, okay, this is the area against my competition. I feel like I clobber him or her. And then I want to be able to highlight how great you are in this area. And I want to be able to highlight how great you are in relation to the competition. An example I use of that is say you were, I've worked with a restaurant who has a competitor in the area, and I'll highlight maybe you offer delivery or that your wait times aren't as long. And you could create some content around that, very short, very sweet content around that, that enhances your appeal to a local audience, a local audience who may be stay-at-home moms who are busy, who don't have time for long waits. You know, you can show some visuals, do some testimonials on your website. You can get testimonials, some Google reviews, all those little things that when you're on social media or when you're not spending time with your family, that you can say, hey, you know what? I can reach out to some people in 15 minutes, do some calls to learn some things about my core audience, that I can just pin a note that becomes a blog or becomes a video or talk to them in a way that they come into my business and they end up leaving a positive review because I've given them a coupon or I've incentivized them to use my product or service. I mean, think about how many times we have hundreds of customers, or especially a small business has hundreds of customers, and they may have 5 reviews. So that means they haven't made reviews a priority. That means they're leaving money on the table. Because I know when I see somebody who has been in business for a while and they have 5 reviews, that's almost, and even if they're all 5, I assume that, you know what? What about the thousands or hundreds that may have, the experience was mediocre?
Right.
Because we know that people typically reviews if they had a really bad or really good experience. And if the people, nobody's leaving really good experiences, I'm going to assume that most of them are right in the middle. And that's not anywhere people want to do business anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. This has been a lot of fun. We should do this again.
Absolutely.
What's next for you? Where do people find out kind of, you know, how to work with you or what you could help them out with or all that good stuff?
Absolutely. So my website is ranellsmith.com. It's down, but it'll be back up on Monday or Tuesday. I've been working on it forever. I'm a chronic overthinker. I'm always on Twitter and I use LinkedIn. I'm forcing myself to use LinkedIn religiously. Actually, I'm coming around to liking the platform. I feel like Twitter can get a little too noisy sometimes, but Twitter and LinkedIn are my preferred platforms of choice, and or email me at ranell@ranellsmith.com.
Cool. And as I have misspelled 100 times this week, Ranell has 1 N and 2 L's.
You're not
one,
the first.
One lonely little N and 2 happy little L's. So that's how I can remember. Well, this was so much fun. You're clearly like just, I love people who are geeky about what they do. That's one of my favorite qualities. And you, you're clearly very passionate. Is maybe more politically correct word, but
I like geeky.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. Really good talking to you, and we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Sonia.